in the 21st century. Hardworking people working hard for you and me. Moving higher, time and time again. Through the years, you'll find us here. Moving higher.
Hello and welcome to Moving Iron Podcast number 165. This is Casey Seymour, your host, with my co-host, I guess, Aaron Fennell here, a part of the Moving Iron Podcast. And last week, Aaron and I kicked around the idea of, you know, those higher horsepower articulated four-wheel drives, and then how the rise of the row crop machine started to kind of swing its head around here a little bit in the last, you know, last 10 years. We've had 350 horsepower row crops pretty easy. And within the last 5 years, we've had 400 plus horsepower row crops start popping up. So I couldn't think of a better person to have a discussion with than the man, the myth, the legend himself, Aaron Fennell. How you doing, buddy?
Pretty good, man. Pretty good. Everybody, you can't hold your applause. I can't hear.
All right, man. So let's kick this off.
Hey, first of all, establish your global footprint. Where are you this exact very moment?
I am in Kiev, Ukraine.
There you go.
Getting ready to...
Global attitude.
Yeah. Got to try to find some lucky winners over here to buy equipment from us. So see if we can't get that figured out.
Right on.
All right, man. So let's talk about this for a second. Last week we were talking about tillage, and that's kind of where we kind of steered ourselves off into this kind of rise of the 400 plus horsepower row crop tractor and what that looks like, and how that was becoming more of an integral part of the tillage marketplace, just as for almost more of a compact tractor compared to a four-wheel drive. But the more I thought about it after we had that conversation, the more I thought about, there's a lot of pros to having that high horsepower row crop tractor, but there's also a lot of cons of having a row crop tractor versus a four-wheel drive in various situations. So I guess let's start there. What's your opinion? Let's take a look at this. Let's do a quick poll between the two of us here. What's your opinion of that high horsepower row crop tractor and the niche it fills compared to the traditional four-wheel drive?
Okay. This is opinion, okay? This isn't any kind of industry brains involved in this.
Right.
My opinion is 400 plus is four-wheel drive.
Okay.
Now, the reason for that is, and this will dwell, well, no, give your opinion.
I think they both have their place in various situations. I'm going to say that if you are a predominantly a row crop producer, I'm talking the corn soybean guy, I think that this particular machine takes the place of what a four-wheel drive can do in planting, in some tillage work, and those kind of things. Now, like I said, there's pros and cons of that, but I also think that there's a spot in that large row crop operation for a 620 horsepower four-wheel drive way to do the gills, pulling a 2,000 bushel grain cart behind it.
Right. Right. Okay. Now, the reason that I say the 400 on up is four-wheel drive is because if you're pulling DB90, you know, planter or bigger, or, you know, whatever color, a 36-row, a 90-foot planter, or, you know, some of the tillage equipment, you take a 400 to 500, that size of tractor. The main two jobs across the country for that tractor is planter and grain cart.
Right.
Okay. In both instances, the planter less so. You can get a, you know, an, I'm going to screw up the name, an 8R410.
Correct.
You got one of them on a 90-foot planter.
Yeah.
And it'll be fine. The thing, my biggest thing is, and I say the 400 on it is because when you get to that horsepower, you're pulling something that, you know, and I guess I'm thinking from the roading sense or just the generic handling sense, you got to be able to control the damn thing.
Right.
You take an 8R410, there, I did it twice, now it's committed to memory. You take an 8R410 and throw it on one of them 2096 Brent carts, it'll pull it all day long, that's fine. But you got to be able to control that.
Right.
And that's my thing. Horsepower to operate something is different than handling it.
Right.
And that's where I kind of draw the pretend line in the sand,
right,
that 400 horse. I need that rig to be able to handle what it can pull. It can pull it all day long, uphill, downhill, sideways, round corners, whatever, out in, you know, field operation. But I got to be able to control the son of a bitch.
Right.
Okay.
Yep.
The other thing you run into is you take a 400 on down, and I'm using deer here, and the, you know, the 1000 Challenger or whatever Fendt calls it, that it's actually built by Fendt. We know that, but I don't know the Fendt model.
Axion,
you
930.
Okay, there you go.
I think.
You take that rig, and you're going to want to, and I'm not talking about like the manure haulers that have the 710 rear duals and 600 front duals. I'm talking about it being set up like a regular row crop tractor, okay? 480 50 rears, 420 34 fronts, dual, you know, both duals, weighted up, whatever. And you take your four-wheel drive setup for row crop. You have way more footprint by having 8 480 50s than you do with 4 480 50s and 4 420 34s. Which footprint equals traction, footprint equals less compaction. So there's that part of it too. And then you get guys that say, well, no, that four-wheel drive is going to pack it down way more. But if you take an 8R410 or a 9420R and you weight the piss out of that 410 so that you can get all that power to the ground, a four-wheel drive properly weighted, because guys will do the same shit with it. Guys, just the world is very in love with wheel weights.
and if you
look at a lot of our inventory, we're some of the guiltiest ones in the world.
Yeah.
But
yep,
as long as you're not overweighting that four-wheel drive, if you have it weighted for proper operation, it's going to have less compaction than that mechanical front wheel. Plus, more efficiently put power to the ground. Plus, handle the machine better.
Right. That's true. That's a good point.
That's just my thoughts. Now, on the flip side, you take a, we'll use 370s. You take a 9370R properly weighted, an 8370R properly rated. That 8370R will outwork that 9370R all day. And that's just because you have more parasitic loss of power through drivetrain in that 9 than you do in that 8.
Right. Yep. So with that, okay, that was the next thing I was going to bring up to you. So now you've got a row crop that's basically the same horsepower. When you look at the 370R versus the 9370R, right?
And then right.
Now you've got this, the 8R410 and the 9420R, right? So two different horsepower between the two, but significantly different machines.
Right.
Probably still going to have the same parasitic loss and have a similar situation. So now, back to your 400 horsepower argument, which one's the right one to have?
Well, see, now in my definition, you're at the borderline there because you're at 400.
You're a tweener?
Yeah, you're a tweener. It depends what you're doing.
Right.
There, you know, if you're in one of those applications where, trying to think of what the hell, if you're in an application where you have high PTO demand power, not necessarily the pulling power or the weight that you're pulling, that's where the 8 is really going to shine. Okay.
Right.
If it is a heavy load situation, like the machine you're pulling or dealing with is very heavy just by itself. You know, take the 2,000 bushel grain cart. That's where you go with the 9.
Yep. I think my opinion of those, when you start looking at those two machines, and you kind of brought it up a little bit ago, when you're talking about the tillage aspects of it, and I'm more towards tillage than the planting side of it is, but the natural weight of the four-wheel drive compared to the natural weight of a row crop, I think if you're looking at high-speed planting and those kind of things and the size of the machine and pulling it across the field, I got to think you'd want to lean towards that four-wheel drive more than that row crop tractor if you're looking at a 25 or 30-foot high-speed disc.
Yeah.
I just think it would perform better, don't you? Don't you think it would just – I've not seen either one of the – I mean, I've not seen a row crop tractor behind there. We always dress ours up with – when we get one, we always dress ours up with the 9620 RX just so it – we know there's tons of horsepower there to make it go out and do what it needs to do. But I just feel like just the ballast of the four-wheel drive and like you said, the weight, and it's a longer machine, you know. So you're gonna have a little bit better control of that disc pulling you down behind. I think it just makes more sense to me to look at a four-wheel drive and for tillage situations.
Yeah, and okay, to use the high-speed disc reference, because they are a very, very popular machine, regardless of what color brand that high-speed disc is, you got to be scooting when you pull that thing.
Right.
And I have always recommended to guys, from personal experience dealing with them, that if you have 30-foot or bigger, plan on 500 horse. Well, that solves any argument, because that 35 or that 30 footer needing 500 horse, boom, automatically paired with a four wheel drive.
Right.
You get to that 25 and then it's kind of, what do you know, it's kind of buyer's choice type deal there.
Yeah. The other side too, the flip side, see, it's a pros and cons here. So we did a podcast, I don't know how many podcasts ago, but we talked about the evolution of four-wheel drives with the high-flow pumps, three-point PTO, and how those have become a big deal. It almost seems like the row crop tractor high-pump situations were a lot more prevalent than in four-wheel drives for a long, long time. And now we're starting to see that kind of flip around. You know, hydraulic demand on equipment anymore is high, regardless of what you're using, it seems like. But when you start looking at those two machines sitting next to each other, one's got both of them got 3-point PTO and high flow pumps, then you have to start thinking about your weight considerations and what you've got as far as stopping power or roading safety and those kind of things. And I feel like I'm kind of with you when you start looking at, let me think about putting a 42 foot, air seeder with a 350 bushel car behind it, full up, ready to go. I mean, that's, you got a lot of weight going down the road there, and you need
right.
You need a heavy machine that can stop itself plus what you got coming behind it. So I'm kind of with you a little bit on that when you look at it from a planting perspective.
Right. It's kind of like in the diesel pickup versus toter truck scenario.
Right.
You can go, diesel pickups nowadays will pull all kinds of shit that they really shouldn't. They have got unlimited power, you know, transmissions, rear ends, you know, they'll do all kinds of shit. They still just have pickup brakes.
Right.
You know, and that's where the toter truck thing has really come to life in the last 5-10 years. The tractor thing's kind of the same. You know, you got a 370 that'll pull all kinds of shit, but it's not going to handle it like a 9370 will.
Yes.
Little different in machinery, right. You know, where, you know, obviously everything with the two different, with the pickup truck scenario is all road related, and your main aspect of the tractor world is field,
right,
action, but you're still handling it even when you're in the field.
Yeah.
It's not just pulling it.
So,
you know, I can remember in the days of cultivators, you know, guys getting 16 row cultivators on the backs of 4840s, 4850 2-wheel drives, you know, and they can pull it all day long. And they can kind of lift it up at the end if they got enough damn weights and tanks and all this shit on the front. And then going down the road, you really got to slow down to turn, because you do all your turning by brakes. The front tires are just barely touching. So that's, you know, that's an old school scenario of, hell yeah, I can pull that through the field, but, and even the 3-point probably even lift it up.
Yeah.
But then how do you control the tractor?
Exactly. No, that makes sense. That's a good point. So, okay, machines, as they evolve here, we start looking at different things that they're set up with. We're starting to see more and more stuff come out with trailer brakes and implements having brakes on them and those kind of things. How does that play in that scenario, do you think?
Well, when we get to where that is there more prevalent across, you know, the industry, then I think that takes a little bit of the which one should I buy scenario out of it, because your handling aspects are there for either rig, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. And that's kind of the one outlier when that becomes a very standardized thing that we'll see more high horsepower row crop tractors than we will 4-wheel drives doing stuff we saw 4-wheel drives doing, with the exception of where you need 500 or 600 horsepower on
right
hardcore demand. You know what I mean?
And basically what you're saying is when we get to that point where everything has brakes and all this kind of shit.
Yeah.
My argument of the where 400 is the breaking point, then automatically moves to where 500 is the breaking point.
Yeah, I think so.
Basically,
to some extent, yeah. That's kind of that would be what I was saying. The other thing about that too, the other side of that is, I mean, how much damn bigger can you make a row crop tractor be before it's just you're running 777-10s across it instead of 444-80s?
Right. Exactly.
Sooner or later, I mean, that's what you talked to your point earlier. You're going to start seeing guys put, instead of triples, you're going to start putting quadruples or, you know, 5 rear tires across the back to get the right flotation and the right amount of surface area to the ground so they can go out and do that. I mean, then you're just making the machine wider. So how does that solve any safety problems?
Well, and I'm not, not just safety, but handling nimbleness that,
right.
And that's where when you get your, both of them are 400, that's a huge factor too that we haven't discussed, the nimbleness of that mechanical front and the ability to do more things with it than just be a big giant
right
power plant.
yeah, that does make a big difference. So, back right now, most of these county roads, when you have a four wheel drive of any model, maker model, running down the road that's got dual 800s on it, that's the entire shoulder to shoulder pretty much of that road you're going down.
Absolutely, yeah.
So that becomes another situation to talk about when you look at this stuff is, again, okay, so now you're going to start putting triples on there. Even a 410 with an 8R 410 with triples on it, that's pretty wide in the back. I mean, you're an 800 and a half, I guess, is what you're – no, you wouldn't. Yeah, 800 and a half, three quarters, I guess, of that same spacing that you'd see on that four-wheel drive with 800 duals on it, but – there's a sooner or later you start running out of road space.
Well, actually, you'd be every bit as wide as the dual 800s simply because of you have space.
Oh, yeah.
You got to account for the space between the three tires, too. So.
Yeah. So you really haven't narrowed it up at all. But.
Right.
Nimbleness, right. The point being, the nimbleness of that row crop tractor is more than the four wheel drive. You're able to
absolutely
in and out, and back around, and it's not as long, right? It's not, it's not as much of a machine there making a thing happen, but
it's kind of like my least favorite series of tractors, 7Rs.
All right.
You get a 7310R versus an 8310R.
Yeah.
There are a couple situations where that 7 is ideal machine.
Right.
Yep. We sell a lot of high horsepower 7s to dairies and feedlots for running feed wagons, right?
Yep.
A lot of horsepower strictly for the PTO use of it in a smaller package. And then my personal thought, once you hit 235 or 245 on up, I'm 100%, 100,000% 8R versus 7R.
Mm-hmm.
Even though, and I know guys, I've actually talked to a guy who has put the triple mowers, a huge gaining popularity thing.
Yep.
I have a lot of guys calling me about them. Those, and that's where the 7R kind of really shined. But there again, I've talked to a guy that had a, what was it? Was it a 320? No, an 8295R, front 3-point front PTO, and he had a 30-foot triple mower on it, and it was just the greatest damn thing ever invented in the history of mankind.
Yeah.
More often, though, you see the 7 because it's not as big.
Right.
And they still have TLS and they got cab suspension, all that stuff, so you can put down 30 feet hay at 15 mile an hour and just haul ass all day long.
Right.
Super productive machine. Plus, that tractor costs less than the 8R does.
Right.
So. It's kind of that same argument when you get into that series versus the top end of 8, bottom end of 9,
right,
on which do you go with.
Yep. So one thing I think we're leaving out in this conversation, as we've talked about nimbleness and we talked about width of transport and everything else, is how are the track systems going to start playing a bigger role into what we see in the field as far as operation goes, whether it's a 9RX, an 8RX, Delta track or a quad track, case quad track, or cases half track system they've got. Start looking at putting 36-inch belts in the back versus tires and the amount of area that you actually put to the ground comparatively to running a couple tires out there. So, what's your opinion of that, and how do you think that's going to change the way guys operate equipment as far as transport goes?
I like to think that I have a pretty good handle on the equipment business.
Yeah.
I have zero, zero, zero idea where that 8RX is going to land.
I'm right there with you.
Is it going to be take over the two-track and the tire world? Is it going to take over one of the two? Is it going to be still expensive? I love it, but someday when they're 10 years old, the hockey guys can afford them. But there was only five new ones sold. You know, it falls into, there's so many unknowns with the 8RX that I have no idea even to speculate where they're going to land outside of cool factor. It is the absolute, the mayor, the sheriff, head janitor of Coolsville.
Right.
No question right now. But from a machine utilization on the farm sense, I don't have a clue where that thing's going to land.
Well, I think
now,
I personally believe that the quad, or go ahead, finish your thought. Sorry. Go ahead, finish your thought.
The small 9RXs, the 420s and 470s.
Right.
I see them gaining popularity within our territory. And nationally, they're not gaining popularity as fast as I thought maybe they would, because I know, well, but if you look at that from the red scenario, Case IH with their, what they call their road track, you know, their smaller quad tracks, there was a lot, I feel like a lot of guys jumped on those and they've kind of like the news worn off and they're just kind of, they are what they are.
Yeah.
So, you know, guys have gone back to actual quad tracks or something else, wheels, you know, they're kind of a very damn expensive niche machine,
right?
Whether they're red, green, yellow, whatever.
Right.
The big quads, you know, regardless of what color, you know, they're here to stay. They're going to keep doing their thing. So, of course, the big quads are in the, you know, over five, so they're not really part of this argument, but. And there's only one, when it comes to deer, there's only one two-track that would be in the argument, and that'd be the 470. And, you know, your option on that's 30 or 36, so you're not row cropping with it.
Right.
So I guess that's kind of my thoughts on that whole different, all those different segments and how they fall into that.
I think tracks are going to be a bigger, broader part of portfolios on the farm. The argument that tracks are more expensive to operate and own than tires are is, that's kind of not the same, and that's not really true anymore. The price of tires have gone up so much and got so expensive that it costs you about the same to take care of, to retire an entire machine as it does to, you know, fix the undercarriage and put a new set of tracks on a track machine. So,
that's exactly right. Back in the say the 84-10 days.
Right.
Yes, it was a lot more expensive to deal with tracks.
Yep.
Today, where you have eight tires on that row crop tractor.
Yep.
And versus, you know, 18-inch tracks on a 370 yep. RT. It's actually cheaper in the long run. You know, if you look at, like, say, 8,000 hours, you're doing two sets of tracks, two sets of tires, plus you've had to fix, you know, something on the ILS or something there. You're going to be, the tracks in the long run is actually cheaper to operate in the long run than the front dual machine.
So I think in my as that those have narrowed up and become a lot more equal with each other as far as maintenance cost goes, I think there's going to be more tracks. personally. I mean, there's less slip,
right?
More power to the ground. I could go on for days about how great track machines are, but so I think that's going to be a bigger thing. And I think the RX, 8RX, is going to be a tractor that is going to be, you know, it might not be kind of like the high speed planter. You know, when it first came out, it wasn't necessarily taken off like a wildfire, but within 2 or 3 years, it was one of the most high demanded planters out there, especially in the used marketplace that we'd seen. You know, so.
Oh yeah, if you look at how many 2015 high speeds are out there,
yeah,
versus how many 17 or 18s, holy shit, dude, that's a huge difference.
Yeah, amazing. It's absolutely amazing. So I think it's like that. I think you're going to see a kind of a couple years of, make sure, let's watch it, see if what it's, you know, if it's worth the price tag type of thing, kind of that mentality that we've seen here of late. And I mean, look at the number of aftermarket guys that have popped up with the bolt-on. What's Mudhog's got one, don't they? Like their four-wheel driver, and they got for combines. Now you can get a track system on it or something like that.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, you can put tracks on the end of the combine.
So you put tracks on the front, tracks on the back. And I just think, especially when you start looking at how muddy it's been over the last three seasons, planting seasons and harvest seasons, I mean, I just think I think tracks are going to have a bigger splash in 2020, 2021 than we've seen up to that point.
Yeah, that could very well be accurate.
Okay, man. Well, any last thoughts you want to throw out there on this topic before we close her down?
Not that I can think of. You know, one other thing I was going to mention here quick. We were talking about nimbleness, and you made the statement, how damn big can you make a row crop tractor and still have it be a row crop tractor?
Right.
If you go take a 4955 and park it next to a 370,
right,
it looks like you can fit two of those 4955s inside that 370.
Oh, yeah.
You know, so how big can you make it? We might be about there. There's a lot of sheds that you can't drive in a big Magnum or a big 8R with on 50s.
Right.
You know, the damn shed, you could drive an 8820 combine in it, but you can't drive a damn row crop tractor in it.
Right. Yeah.
You know, we're kind of there. They're huge.
Yeah. Yep. And I bet you if you put a 370R next to a 8300 and see how much bigger that machine is, then.
Yeah.
I mean, you'd be surprised.
They dwarf them.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Oh, yeah. Plus, you start looking at it. The other part of that, too, is road infrastructure. You know what I mean? Just like these bridges can only hold so much. And, you know.
Yeah, exactly.
They only make them so wide, you know. And we still build roads based on the width of two horses next to each other pulling a cart down the road, you know. So
right.
Sooner or later, it's We kind of hit our point, I think. So, yeah,
right. Yep.
All right, man. Well, as usual, Aaron, appreciate you being on. Any last thoughts you want to throw out there before we move it on down the road here?
Nothing I can think of.
All right, folks.
I think we covered her pretty good today. So,
if folks want to reach out to you and pick your brain about some stuff, how's the best way to do that?
Well, they can call me, text me, 308-760-1193, or look me up on the Twitterverse, at Aaron Fintel. I got some deals on there pretty often and interact with guys quite a bit on there, too. So that would be by far the best two ways.
Okay. And I am Casey Seymour. You can find me on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram at Moving Iron LLC. Check out movingironllc.com for all the latest Moving Iron news. So till next time, I'm Casey Seymour with Aaron Fintel. Let's go move some iron, folks. Have a good one. Out.
Moving iron in the 21st century. Hardworking people. again. Through the years, you'll find us here. Move.